fulfilled. I sighed when I said the words. It was partially true. I thought of Kyair, my sister, Reliara, Grednil, my father, and even my mother. Mostly I thought of Kyair, and longed to see him again. It has been 22 years. Then I have enjoyed my solitude more than I previously believed. I smiled at her, and then took a drink from my bottle of mead. Do you know what is happening in the world? She was angry, and I tasted the bitter pepper of her displeasure. No, I don't care to involve myself in it. I am content, despite how angry that seems to make you. Our world is in ruins, Ayelrathi. Our race faces extinction. Her face was grave, and the scent of anger faded. She paused to see my reaction, but I only raised an eyebrow. My sister was not dramatic or prone to hyperbole. The humans have formed an army and attacked us. Their intention is to wipe us from the world, she continued. So destroy them. I don't see how this justifies you coming here to disturb me. These are not mere humans, Ayelrathi. They wield our magic with more power and skill than our best warriors. They heal quickly and are nearly impossible to kill. They call themselves the Obarni. I felt a chill descend my spine, and I fought against the fear. Was that not the old name for the humans that killed the dead gods? I asked. History had never interested me, but I had heard our legends. Every elven knew the story. My head started to ache as if my brain was swelling. Yes, but these humans are not the same. They can be killed, and our warriors are not compelled to serve them. Then kill them. Even if they are powerful, we are elvens and should be able to handle the animals. Your words are familiar, sister. I said the same when I returned for my initial quest in search of you. Countless chieftains have said them. The tribes felt no need to organize. We could not cooperate and unite against this threat as no one took it seriously. At first they were nothing but a nuisance, attacking small tribes, interfering with trade, picking off caravans and travelers. With their success, they grew bolder. Their numbers grew. Larger tribes were attacked and fell. Their humans joined the army. 4 years ago, Mother finally began to appreciate that they were a threat and made a hasty alliance with the Bornid, Huriuru, Opuroti, Jukiti, and Cornital tribes. That sounds more far-fetched than a human army. I snorted and shook my head. My mother would sooner eat a plate of her own feces than consider spending any time with the chieftains Nyadarathi had listed. I wish you could have seen it. The irony would have impressed you. But there was hope that we could defeat the humans, so the other tribes joined our mother. Soon we had an army of 200,000 warriors. But there were struggles internally. We had too much posturing amongst the tribes and not enough training or strategy. Mother couldn't organize them properly, and the other tribal leaders were more interested in glory than uniting for success. The men and women sitting around the campfire nodded solemnly at my sister's words, but none glanced at me. Even Reliara stared intently into the fire. So she sent you here to seek my help organizing this army? You can tell her to fuck herself. I exhaled sharply. It was just like the woman to send Nyarathi to beg for cooperation from me. I tried to release my anger, but it coiled in my stomach, and I knew that the gathered men and women at the fire could smell my emotion. I thought the years of isolation had cured my frustration, but they had not. No, Ayelrathi. Mother is dead. The entire army was destroyed by these humans. Their tribal lands were raided and their inhabitants butchered like animals. In the last year, millions of our people have died. The air of the north burns brown with the smoke of corpses and cities. Refugees have fled to the west. Your father and the last remaining elven tribes are desperate. That is why we are here. Her words struck me like a slap across the face. My mother was far too clever and bitter for death. She had survived countless assassination attempts and outmaneuvered hundreds of attacks from other tribes and elders seeking to claim her land. How could humans have killed her? How could they have killed millions of my people? My sister never lied, especially to me. I licked my lips and tasted the sadness in the air. It mixed with the smoke of the cooking fire into a strange, burnt despair. I could not imagine what the stench of the horror she described tasted like. The last chieftains have argued about our defense strategy. They finally acknowledge the threat the humans pose. They do not wish to repeat the mistakes of our mother, yet they cannot agree on a general. And each day that passes brings the Obarni closer to devouring what remains of our world. They want me to lead the army? Yes. There is no one better suited than you. You are the most powerful of our kind, have studied battle strategies, you know combat, and the chieftains all agree to follow your orders. You are our last hope, Iola Rathi. I looked into the fire and digested her words. It had been so long since I considered the needs of my people. I had never cared for politics or the traditions of our tribes. Their way was to force me to fuck men I did not love so that I could create children to be sold and traded like animals. But it was not their choice. My family, my suitors, they were all just part of a system put into place thousands of years before we were born. They were as helpless to change the system as I had been, and did not deserve to be left to die at the hands of humans. I stood up and walked to the rear of the cottage where my garden lay. In the raised beds, the first of the season's bounty was beginning to come in. Fresh, tender shoots of green fought their way through the rich earth. Soon the trees would bloom with flowers and fruit would come into season. I had raised each tree and carefully maintained and nurtured them. What would happen to this place if I left? The wild would take back the orchard, weeds would fill the garden, vines would rip apart the stone of the cottage, and the thatch on the roof would rot and fall away. I wandered down to the river and sat on the grassy slope of the shore. I had a well a few dozen feet from my cottage, but felt it was wise to have another source of fresh water and fish nearby. Combined with the other herd animals, chickens and ducks I maintained, I could support myself or even a small tribe of my own. This is the opportunity to do what you always wanted. I had not heard Nyarathi's approach. You can change things for yourself and our people. Your rule will be absolute. You will be an empress with an army to obey your every command and fulfill your every desire. This is what I want. I am the ruler here. This land fulfills all my desires. So you will leave us to die. How long do you think you will be safe here? They won't rest until every one of our kind is gone. Her anger returned and filled the air. They will not seek me out here. Stay with me. We can start a new tribe. I can provide for you all. Iola Rathi, you are wrong. You will never be safe here. They will search for you forever. The humans don't even know about me. They do know about you. How do you think they came into existence? She stood angrily and moved to block my view of the river. How should I know? I don't care for the humans or their ways. You lie to your own sister. Well, Yara and I have spent too many years together. If you really wanted to keep your secret safe, you should not have sent her to me. Her black eyes burned with malice, and the anger of her scent mixed with the bitterness of rotten fear. I don't see what my past has to do with this army. I wanted to ask her to tell me what she knew, but assumed Rel'Yara had told her of Kyaer. Who do you think leads this army? Do you think it is just a coincidence that Laxiel has not yet been attacked? I stared at her, and the world seemed to collapse into my vision. For a second, it was as if my heartbeat and the air hung still. Sense became tasteless, and my head spun and my skull ached. No. That is impossible. It is. The man that leads these Obarni is named Kyaer. Our spies know little of his past, but there are rumors that he used to be a slave to Laxiel. Rel'Yara told me of your history with this human. She told me how you killed his family. Millions of our people have died by this man's army, and he won't stop until he kills every last one of us. Her voice had been rising in volume and anger until it reached a screech. You caused this! They are all dead because of you! And you just want to hide? No, I won't let you. There is only one person who can defeat this monster, and it has to be the woman who made him. So get the fuck off the ground, get your weapons, and do what the dead gods intended for you. Protect your fucking people or die trying. She seemed to vibrate in place, and I didn't know if it was because of her actual anger or because the news of Kyaer made my vision spin. I still thought of him every day, but I never expected him to come seeking revenge. How could I have known that he would become so dangerous? I get the feeling you'll run me through if I say no. Her hand clenched along the handle of her blade. I had left my own back by the fire. I couldn't even fathom fighting against her, and I briefly wondered if she actually had the resolve to attack me. No. I'll order one of the other warriors to take you by force. I sighed and stood up. My legs shook, but I didn't think my sister noticed. I looked over the valley again, and then back to her. Her scent betrayed her fear that I would say no. She did not want to stand against me, but she really believed she needed me. They all needed me. I'll prepare my things. We can leave tomorrow morning. She smelled surprised. Then she cried and threw her arms around my shoulders in an embrace I did not expect.
Chapter 25, The Obarni. They made a mistake. This punishment does not fit the crime. Gorbani crossed his arms and glared at me. I knew him well enough to understand the posture. I cannot fucking believe you, I growled through clenched teeth at the blonde man. Why? They are my top lieutenants, and we don't have a rule against... Stop. Fucking stop talking right now. I put my face in my hands and rubbed my temples. Then I rubbed my eyes. I didn't want to be dealing with bullshit like this now. There were 1.5 million tasks I needed to perform before the sunset, and I guess there was only an hour left of its precious light. Kyair, I'll suspend them. I'll demote them. Whatever you want to do besides that. It isn't going to help anyone, and it will destroy the morale of my unit. The morale is already destroyed because you let this shit go on. I didn't look up from my hands. I didn't know it was happening. I swear on the lives of all of my warriors. Then you haven't been paying attention, and I am even angrier with you, Gorbani. You are supposed to know what kind of activities your team is engaged in while in combat. Either you aren't spending enough time with your warriors, or you are incompetent. I looked up from my hands, and our eyes met. I could see the anger and hurt in his, but I didn't fucking care. You are taking this too seriously, the blonde man turned to Thayer. This isn't a big deal. It is, brother. We don't do these things. Thayer shook his head and ran a big hand over his bare scalp and scarred face. Fine. I'll tell them that it was wrong and then suspend them from their duties. No. The point is that they should have known not to do it in the first place. How would they know? We kill them, all of them, without mercy. We kill their children. We kill their elders. We kill prisoners, the wounded. We accept no surrender. How is what they did any worse than killing them all? I heard footsteps approach my tent and knew it was Malik before he opened the flap. What did they do? The handsome man said when he stepped into my tent. The chest plate of his pieced-together armor had a giant puncture in the shoulder that ripped down to the center like a cat's scratch. The day's battle had been fierce, and Malik's forces had been forced to enter the main fray to support Alexia's team. Thayer and I turned to Gorbani, and the blonde man shook his head with a clenched jaw. The four of us stood in silence for almost a minute until he finally looked at his feet and sighed in defeat. Six of my men were raping elven women. Ah, I see. Malik exhaled and looked around my tent. Fuck, I could really sit down now. Why don't you have chairs in your tent? And I could drink a flagon of wine, or three. He grunted and lowered himself down to the wooden planks of my floor. The movement sounded creaks and groans from his armor, and I tasted the scent of blood from injuries that had already healed. Kyair wants them executed, Gorbani said with obvious disgust. My men do not deserve this punishment. They didn't know we had rules against rape. Why would you think we did not have rules against rape? I asked. My heart beat in my ears, and I did my best to fight against my anger and disappointment. Gorbani was a talented commander, steadfast, loyal, disciplined, and I trusted him to run a chunk of our small army alongside Thayer and Alexia. He had done a wonderful job, and even helped Malik get accustomed to his new role at our planning table. It had been 4 or 5 years since Alexia and I saved him from slavery, and I felt as if he was my brother. I was starting to question my assessment of him. "Go get Alexia and return." I realized what the man was missing. "Very well." He seemed pleased with my suggestion. "She will agree with me." Thayer snorted, and Gorbani's sudden strike of confidence faded from his face just as quickly as it came. "What? She is merciless with them. She enjoys their suffering more than the four of us put together. Just get her, and bring wine for Malik." I sighed and felt my anger fade. "Wait, not just for me. We will all need some wine for this." "Fine. Should I get Entus?" the horseman asked. "No. I was just at his tent, and he said he was busy." Malik bent his neck sideways to glance at me. "He said he wants to see you after supper, though." I nodded, and then watched Gorbani leave the tent. Malik waited a few minutes to ensure he was out of earshot before speaking. "You really want to execute them?" "Yes. I'm surprised this has not happened yet." Malik leaned back with a creak of leather until he was flat on the wood flooring of my tent. "Why are you surprised?" Thayer walked over to the other side of the tent and lay down next to Malik on the floor with an exhausted sigh. All of us were covered with dried mud and elven blood. "It happens in war. Our men want to do to the elven women what has been done to countless human women. We have watched our mothers, sisters, daughters, and lovers raped by elven men. As Gorbani said, we want to spread fear through their population. We only take a few prisoners and exterminate the rest, including their pregnant women, their children, and even their babies. Isn't that more horrible than rape?" "It is wrong. I hate them and want our freedom at any cost, but I can understand Gorbani's argument." Malik sighed and turned his head to look at me. "I don't envy your role in this." Thayer snorted a laugh and stretched on the ground. They both lay silent until Gorbani's footsteps approached. "I brought her," he said when he opened the flap. Both Gorbani and Alexia were blonde with blue eyes, but that was the end of their similarities. Alexia's eyes were a cold, snowy ice, while Gorbani's were a warmer ocean water. Her hair was a light shade of sun-bleached platinum, and his was darker, with shades of red and brown at the roots. Gorbani was my tallest general, and had a massive reach with his muscular arms, while Alexia was small and lithe. Her features were delicate, sharp, and beautiful, like a bird of prey. "Heh, couldn't hear you walking, sister." Thayer cracked open his eyes, and then both he and Malik inched up from the floor and sat up with jerky movements that reflected their exhaustion. "What do you need?" She looked at me without a smile. Her armor was unmarked from the battle, but that was usually the case. She was fastidious with organization and cleanliness, and often didn't rest for many days after a battle. "Gorbani and I have a disagreement," I began. The pretty woman raised an eyebrow at the horseman, and he lifted a hand politely to interrupt me. "Kyair wishes to execute 6 of my men." "4?" Her mouth hardened, and silence hung uncomfortably in the air. She already knew what had transpired, and was making her friend voice the crime. "They raped elven women. We had no rules against the—" She raised her hand suddenly, and Gorbani's words cut off like he had been choked. "Are you asking my opinion because I am a woman, a victim, or a human?" She looked at him with a hard stare that could have crumbled rock. You forgot Commander. I smiled at her, and her shoulders relaxed slightly. You have a unique perspective. Please tell us your thoughts. I am prepared to be persuaded from my opinion. I am a human first, and a woman second. She took a deep breath and ran her left hand through her short hair. But I would be lying if I didn't think about the elvens that raped me every time I kill one of them. Each battle we win, I think of as one step closer to freedom, and one step closer to my sisters being safe from their vile assaults. I care not what happens to the elvens, and I have killed too many to count. Gorvani nodded and opened his mouth to speak, but she continued. With that said, we should aim to deal them their fate as quickly as possible. I do not condone rape of their women. I doubt they have the same emotions that we possess, but we are better than that. Are we not fighting for a world where the strong do not prey upon the weak? I wouldn't exactly call their women weak, sister, Thayer grunted. No, but Gorbani's men were stronger. They overpowered a woman and forced themselves upon her. I shudder to think of how similar the situation was to my own rape. Alexia never spoke in detail of her assault. Thayer and I stumbled upon the attack while we were scouting the tribe's trade route and farming lands. The elvens that were in the process of raping the beautiful woman were dealt with quickly and without mercy. We will make it part of our laws. I will tell all of my warriors, and it will never happen again. We do not need to execute them. Gorbani attempted to speak the words with conviction, but the last sentence sounded like a question. He was leaving the decision up to Alexia. We all were. The offending men need to seek forgiveness from the women in your unit. Our army has valued equality between our sexes, and I have never felt unsafe around any of the human men in our ranks. But allowing them to rape women, even elven women, sets a dangerous precedent and destroys the trust and equality we have built here. If we allow them to view elven women as things they can use for their own pleasure, it will not be long before they begin to view their fellow female soldiers in the same way. They will apologize. It will not happen again. Gorbani rose to his feet easily and dashed from the pavilion without another word. Alexia waited until our sensitive ears heard his steps blend into the crowd of the camp before speaking. "May I speak alone with Kyair?" she asked Malik and Thayer. They nodded quickly and followed Gorbani's path out of the tent and down into the camp. "I wish you had not gotten me involved," she said the words with no anger. "I was not able to convince him," I said. "I understand your reasoning, but it doesn't change my wishes. How could I have done it better? I don't know. But that is what you do. You figure shit out that we can't." She crossed her arms and tilted her head slightly. It made her short hair bob to one side of her slender neck. "Fair enough. I'll get better." I smiled at her, and she mirrored the expression. "I've got more work to do. We all having dinner tonight?" "Yes. Today was a good day. You figure out the losses?" I asked. 15 for me. Gorbani lost 24, Thayer 28, and Malik lost 12. The elvens were wiped out, 600 or so. A few dozen escaped into the forest, but my warriors are tracking them. They should be exterminated by the end of the night. "Thank you for the update." She nodded and silently slid out of my tent. Later tonight, she would have an exact list of names for me to review. I hated losing soldiers, but it was unavoidable. We could not rid this world of the elvens without bloodshed on both sides. We were close to 1,000 strong, but only 1/3 of that number was trained thoroughly enough for combat. The rest would not be ready for many more months. Didn't Malik ask you to come see me? I spun around and stopped myself from sending a dagger flying out of my hand at the last second. You scared the shit out of me. I let out a breath and glared at Entis. The old man was sprawled out on my cot like a snake. How did you get in here? You were lost in thought, and I walked right past you. I doubt that happened. There are infinite possibilities in the universe. One day you might even take a ride on a dragon and change the world forever. He bobbed his balding head and made a cooing sound like a dove. What do you need? Usually I tried to ignore the old man's ramblings. Half of the time he made little sense, and the other half he spoke in riddles that only made sense a few days later. There is a group of humans running from Elvens. They are about 200 miles south and a few dozen miles to the west. You should send Malik and another one of your commanders to intercept them and bring them into our camp. How do you know this? For once my teacher was being direct, and it was puzzling to me. The same way I knew that you and Thayer were at the foothills of my mountain. He smiled a goofy grin. You were both really loud, and it woke me up. Fine, I'll send a group. Malik. Send Malik and his entire unit. Okay. Anyone else you prefer? Nope. But send another commander and their unit, just in case Malik runs into some of our pointy-eared friends. Tell him to camp at the merging of the Ellard and Corlard rivers. The Ellard runs north and south and is freshwater. The Corlard runs east and west and is salty. I am familiar with the area. There weren't any elven tribes within 50 miles of the rivers, but the terrain was wide open, and we deemed it unsuitable for a camp because of the lack of cover. That is all I need. His face scrunched. Let me know when they return. You haven't been interested in recruiting in a few years. Is there anything special about this group? You'll have to tell me. He giggled like a little boy, and then rolled back on the bed. He did that when the answer to one of his questions should have been obvious. All right, I'm going to go tell Malik. I'll tell Gorbani to go with him. Is that because you are angry with the man? He stopped his laughing abruptly, and his face hardened. Yes, I realized that I could never twist the truth with the strange old man, so I had stopped trying long ago. Good. Go tell them, then. He waved his hand, and I took 3 steps out of the tent before I realized that he had dismissed me from my own tent. Part of me wanted to walk back in and ask him how he managed to command me so easily, but I would have been given more riddles instead of an answer. I just shook my head, laughed, and continued on my way to speak to Malik. Chapter 26 Kyre. The footsteps rolled down the empty hallway of the dungeon like thunder across a desert basin. They awoke me from the memory of the conversation with Entis, and I felt the usual disorientation that accompanied the transition from one of my recollections to the present. I thought of my old teacher for a few more seconds, and wondered about the last mission he asked Malik to lead. I knew exactly who my handsome friend would find during the quest, and this made me wonder about my teacher's knowledge of the future. The steps neared, and I swung my body out of the cot and onto my feet. I knew who they belonged to, and I did not try to keep the smile from my face as they approached. Nadia, I greeted the beautiful woman when she stepped in front of the bars of my jail cell. Hello, Kyre. She wore an emerald dress of thick velvet that hugged her arms, chest, and stomach before it billowed out from her waist. Her dark brown hair was held up by a series of complicated knots bound together by delicate pearl and amethyst hairpins. Across the smooth skin of her neck, a tight band of white metal held matching purple gems and pearls. Escorting the Duchess were 2 elven guards wearing the Empress's green armor. The male carried a small loaded crossbow in his hand, and the female rested her hand on a short spear with a wicked-looking tip. They both had the same pewter hair and red eyes as Virnine. I wondered again if the soldiers that reported directly to the Empress were born that way, or if there was some process that changed them. "It is good to see you again," I said to Nadia, and I reached out of the bars of my cell toward her. I stopped short when she didn't return the gesture and take my hands. "It is good to see you as well." She smiled halfway, but her heart began to beat a bit faster. "May we speak alone?" I asked the guards that stood behind her. "No," the female answered. The Empress said this was the only way we could speak to each other, Nadia quickly explained. Just pretend they aren't there. That is what I do. She seethed the last sentence, but the guards ignored her words. Our eyes met, and neither one of us spoke for a few moments. I studied the torch reflection in her dark eyes and wondered what could have been between us if I had succeeded in stopping the Empress. It hurt my heart to know that I had failed my friends. "I am sorry," I said at last. "Oh?" She raised an eyebrow and crossed her arms in front of her chest. My own hands hung outside of the bars, but she didn't acknowledge them. "You awoke me with hopes that I would stop the Empress and her armies. I failed you and your kingdom. Thousands of humans have died because of me. Pog is dead. The pain from the loss of my friend would always lurk in my chest. Is that all you are apologizing for?" Anger came across in her voice, and her heart began to beat faster. "Is there something else I should apologize for? Am I missing something?" "Yes, you are. I should have been more upfront about your mother. I wanted you to see your father first, and I didn't want to distract you before we escaped the castle and you saw Beltor. No, damn it, Kyair." She shook her head and then covered her face with her left hand. "Do you love me?" She tore her hand away from her face and looked at me. Her eyes reflected the light from the torches, but the tears had not descended to her cheek yet. "Yes," I said without hesitation. "You are a good liar. As always, I want to believe you. Maybe that is my fault." She shook her head and frowned. "Why do you think I am lying to you? I know how I feel. You don't love me because you fucked Jesme," she growled through clenched teeth. "I am not allowed to love you and others at the same time. My love for you must be exclusive. So you love Jesme?" "Yes," I said again. She shook her head and sighed. "I told you how I feel about this. I explained that I never wanted to be a notch on your bedpost, and that I wanted more from you. Remember when we spoke in your tent, before Islata took you as a hostage? I told you of my dreams, and I thought..." She shook her head again and sniffed before continuing. "I thought that you were interested in that. But you just say whatever you need to get what you want." I opened my mouth to argue, but stopped. She was right. But I knew that I did love both women. I had blamed the state of war that I lived with for my beliefs on love and fidelity, and how they differed so greatly from Nadia and Jesme's ideas on marriage. But I knew what it meant to love one person over all others. Though most of my soldiers had multiple relationships and avoided commitment because death was unpredictable, I had never lived that way. I had spent my entire life loving only one woman. I could never commit to Shlara because of her. I killed Shlara because of her. I killed thousands because of her. "I am sorry." I meant the words sincerely, and our eyes made contact again. "Do you love her?" She whispered the question again after a few moments, as if she didn't want it to be true. "As much as I love you. Damn you, Kyair," You can't say that. She shook her head, and her brown eyes reflected the light of the torches like tiny, beautiful mirrors. It is the truth. My heart thumped painfully in my chest. I had hurt her tremendously. I could not fix this. It is your truth, but it isn't mine. Why didn't you tell me at the camp? She asked. I had no answer. What if I were to ask you to choose? Would you commit to either one of us? It doesn't matter. I am leaving this world and cannot return. Talaxthi hinted at that. Nadia frowned. We do not speak often. We have dinner every few nights, but the conversations are guarded. I get the feeling she doesn't want to tell me things while you are still alive. Your decision to leave also angers me. I apologized for... No, stop. She interrupted me with a wave of her hand. I judge based on actions, not words. You say you love me, but you make love to someone else, someone close to me. You say you love me, but you leave when I need you. You say you love me, but you are giving me up so easily. I hate the way you have made me feel, and I cannot just change how I feel because you say you are sorry. Your words are meaningless. I am not giving up, but you are leaving. There is something more important to you than I am. Yes, there is. I don't want that kind of love. I have a daughter, I said, after a few seconds of consideration. I recall you telling me of her when we last spoke. Are you bringing that up now to excuse your actions? She was livid. No, I sighed. My daughter is like you. Oh, she made the connection. I don't know anything about her, but Talaxthi has knowledge of Iolorothi and studied my history extensively. She said she can tell me more about my daughter if I cooperate with her. It is the last piece of my past that I have not been able to remember, and it is the most important part. I need to know more about her, or I can never put my past to rest. Silence hung between us for almost half a minute. Finally, Nadia nodded and reached for my hand. Our fingers wrapped around each other, and I thought again of what would never be between the two of us. I understand. She will hand me over to Ternia soon. Ternia will take me to the Radical with the Empress. Before I leave, Talaxthi will tell me what she knows of my daughter. What will happen once you journey through the Radical? Nadia asked. I will be brought before the leaders of the Obarni and have to explain myself. Will they kill you? She whispered. Caneth seemed to think so, but I doubt that will happen. I'm sure they can be reasoned with. I forced a smile to my face and hoped she did not sense my true feelings. There would be no reasoning. There would be bloodshed. So I will never see you again. Do you want to see me again? Of course, Kyair. She shook her head with a slight smile, and her dark hair waved in the torchlight. You are still my friend. Jesme will be devastated by this news. The Empress wants her to speak with you after I do. We were both told you would be leaving this world by your own choice. Her voice trailed off, and her fingers tightened around mine. How are your people now that Talaxthi is ruling? It is better than I expected. She held the agreement she submitted to Jesme's father. She participates in the council and advises Jesme. They spend most of their time together, actually. I'm a bit jealous because she is my mother, but the other part of me hates her. I suppose I should be grateful that no one else has died, and we are given the illusion of power. She leaned closer to the bars so that she could whisper in my ear, but I was sure that her elven escorts still heard what she said. Jesme is happy. She will be crowned queen after Nanos is executed next week. Oh, I was surprised. For the murder of the king, Pog, and the betrayal of the kingdom of Naya, It is ironic that the Empress is assisting in the Council's decision to execute him. Nadia smiled faintly. They decided on a hanging instead of a beheading. I would be lying if I said I was not looking forward to watching him dangle. Everything might be different now if he had not betrayed us. I nodded at her words, but the thought of Nanos's execution did not bring me any pleasure. His death wouldn't bring back the king or Pog. How is Beltor? He's taken the lead advisor role of the council, though Talaxthi is spending more time actually advising Jesme. There is a mountain of work to do on castle repairs and trade guild support. Many of our craftsmen fled the city during the invasion, so he is more than busy. I help him where I can, but part of me feels he is so involved as a way of coping with the loss of his brother and the kingdom. I don't want to be sucked in just yet. Graykin? He is never less than 20 feet from Jesme, even when she speaks privately with the Empress. Has Graykin told you what they speak of? He cannot remember. He says they start talking of magic, and then the next thing he recalls is walking out of the suite with Jesme. Jesme did tell me that Talaxthi is teaching her how to operate a radical. You should ask her when she comes here. She may be more forthcoming with you. She smirked rather bitterly at that thought. Danor, Runeer, Merrick, I asked. Helping my father, she answered plainly. I could think of 1,000 other things to say to her, but none of it felt like enough. Are you happy? It was a stupid question, but I wanted the answer almost as much as I wanted to know about my daughter. I have much to be grateful for. I am alive. My people are safe. I do not know how long this peace will last, but as long as Jesme and I have some leverage over the Empress, Naya will be safe. My heart hurts. It will never be the same as before I met you. She looked down and shook her head, then smiled as she looked up at me. I do not regret it. I listened to the dreams, and they led me to you. Dreams? Dreams? She echoed my question, and her head tilted in confusion. You said that the dreams took you to me. What does that mean? I have no idea what you... Suddenly, a wind howled through the hallway like a flood of water. The two guards struggled against the gust and yelled with surprise while the torches flickered dangerously. She is coming for you, Kaer. She knows you live. Find our daughter, protect her, or everything you love will be destroyed by her malice. Go to the Radical and bring her back. Nadia's face pressed against the bars of my cell, but her eyes glowed a strange silver light in the darkness. She spoke in the old language of my memories. Iolarothi. I never thought I would hear her voice again, and the fine hairs all over my body stood up in goosebumps, and my blood froze with fear. As abruptly as the wind began, it stopped, and the torches flickered back to light. By the dead gods, what was that? The male elven guard asked from behind Nadia. My friend looked at me with horror on her face and then glanced over her shoulder. Go check the top of the dungeon. We may be under attack. The guards nodded at her command and sprinted to my left down the hallway. Their footsteps rang off the stone walls, and then I heard a door open and slam shut. That has never happened before. It was her. She took control of my voice. Nadia covered her face with her hands. I want her to stop. Can you make her stop? I was going to tell you at the camp, but Islata arrived before I had the chance. I have dreams of a beautiful woman. Her hair is red like fire, her skin paler than fresh snow. She told me where to find you. That was how I knew. She still comes to me in my dreams. I did what she asked, but she still haunts me. How long have you had these dreams? I would not have believed it if I had not just seen it with my own eyes and heard it with my own ears. since I was a child. I never spoke to anyone about her. At first, I would just see her in my dreams, and the memories would fade when I awoke. A few years before I found you, the messages became more urgent, and they almost felt sinister. She was frustrated with me. She told you how to find my radical? Yes, she gave me the words to say to bring you back. They were in a language I did not understand, but they contained your name. I lied to my father and the king. I told them that I found documents that alluded to finding the Obarni, but I needed someone to translate them. That was why you needed Pog. I filled in the rest of the story. Yes, now he is dead. Her voice cracked. That isn't your fault. It is Nanos's, and he will be held accountable next week. Aye, she nodded and sighed again. I remember the words. I don't understand them. I don't believe Pog even understood them. But your Iola Rothi comes to me in my dreams, and now she speaks through me. Who is she talking about? Someone knows you are alive and wants your daughter? Shlara. But she could not still be alive. You are. I nodded and felt my stomach drop. Could your daughter still be alive? Nadia asked. I remember tracking Iola Rothi to a radical, tended to by an old elven man. He said two women had been there just before I arrived, and the younger one had my eye color. She went through the radical, but the older woman did not follow. Many years later, just before Iola Rothi was killed, I finally found her. She was on a quest to find one of the globes that powers the radicals. She needed one to save our daughter. The ovule? Nadia asked. Yes. Jesme mentioned them. Talaxthi is teaching her how to use them. She pursed her lips in thought and then nodded to herself. If your daughter is alive, could you use the words Iola Rothi taught me to bring her back? I would also need her name and an ovule. I know the world she was sent to, but she may have moved from there. I thought through the process and felt a pang of hopelessness. I didn't need an ovule. I just said the words, and you faded into focus like I was awaking from a dream. You were still asleep on the dais, so I called Pog into the cave and asked him to repeat the words a few more times with me until you awoke. Is it possible you don't need the ovule either? A flicker of excitement lit her brown eyes. This was a puzzle Nadia would love to solve, probably as much as I would. It is possible, but the other variables are still a problem. She nodded. The massive doors to the dungeon opened, and we heard footsteps approaching. Nadia's guards were returning with others. I can try to dream of her tonight. I'll ask her. Even if there was a miracle, and you were able to speak with her across the afterlife, I am leaving tomorrow morning. So you are just going to give up? She snorted and shook her head. The footsteps grew closer. I recognized Fehalda's scent. That does not sound like you. If she is alive, I have to see her. I will not give up. A lump formed in my throat, and I fought to keep it out of my stomach. I wondered what the child would look like, and the desire to meet her forced out the shadows of despair that my exile had recently created. If you can't get me before I leave tomorrow, please document whatever you learn from your dreams. I will return. The approaching guards were close enough to hear us, so I was careful to watch my words. Nadia nodded, and her face cracked slightly with a smirk. You are done. Fehalda walked in front of the group of 15 guards. I am done when I say I am done, Auntie. Nadia chuckled at the last word, and Fehalda gritted her teeth. Then say you are done now, so I don't have to drag you out of here by the hair. I thought Nadia would continue to argue with Fehalda, and the brief flicker of surprise that crested the white woman's face made me believe that she had assumed the same. I will not speak to Jesme. Perhaps we will see each other again one day. She licked her lips and sighed. For a second her beautiful face was hard to read, and I wondered if she really believed that I would return. I wondered if she wanted me to. I will always be grateful to have met you. Thank you for bringing me back to life. I pulled her hand through the bar of my cell and kissed her wrist gently. The movement made her exhale sharply, and she turned from me without another word. Then she walked out of the dungeon without looking back. A few of Fehalda's guards followed Nadia out, but the remainder stayed with the white-haired woman. After the footsteps faded and the door to the dungeon closed, she faced me, and the fury on her face was plain. "What the fuck did you do?" She almost spat through the cell doors. "What do you mean? Don't be coy with me, O'Barney. The wind, the noises. Are you planning something with the Duchess?" "I don't know what you are talking about. I will celebrate the moment you fade through the radical with Ternia. I might actually miss you. Are you going to be escorting your sister on our journey to the radical?" The question seemed to catch the general off guard, and she licked her lips carefully before answering. "Perhaps. It has not been decided yet. What is also under deliberation is your visit with the princess. After hearing of your little trick with the Duchess, my sister is unsure she should trust you with the future queen. She agreed to let me see Jesme." I exhaled and tried to keep my arms from ripping the bars out of the cell walls. "You said you would behave and cooperate. Am I not? I don't know what happened in the dungeon. Perhaps your sister should ask her daughter." I pushed myself away from the bars and stepped back to my cot. "I'll return." She waited a few moments for me to reply, but I covered my eyes with the nook of my arm. I did not know what I would do if Talaxthi prevented me from seeing Jesme. I had no leverage. A few impossibly foolish scenarios sprinted through my head as the footsteps of Fehalda and her soldiers echoed down the hallway and faded into silence. Then I was alone in the dim light of the dungeon torches and the silence of the bare, cold stone. "Kyair?" Jesme's voice was timid. I must have fallen asleep, because I had not heard her walk into the dungeon. I spun out of the cot and struggled to embrace her through the bars of my cell. "I was supposed to have an escort, but Nadia told me that they might not let me come, so she distracted them while I sneaked away. We probably only have a few minutes before they search down here. I am so grateful I can see you once more. I told Nadia I was sorry, and I want to apologize to you as well." She was wearing a light blue gown that reflected some of the torchlight in a hue that I doubted normal human eyes could see. Flowers and hummingbirds danced across the fabric, and I guessed that Talaxthi's private tailor had crafted the gown for Jesme. Her face bore none of the ambivalence of Nadia's. She was not bitter or angry with me. She was only sad. "Why are you leaving? Talaxthi said you are returning to your own world. Is this not your world?" Her hair was bound down her back in a series of complicated braids tied off with snow-white pearls. Her cheeks were accented with red dye, and the same shade was painted onto her full lips. For a moment I didn't want to answer her. I only wanted to study her beautiful face so I would be able to remember everything about her. "I have a daughter. I never knew her, and the Empress has agreed to tell me more if I will leave this world." "Oh, I see." She pursed her lips, and a faint hint of disappointment crossed her features. "This was with the woman in your memories?" "Yes. Wouldn't your daughter be long dead by now? Perhaps I am speaking selfishly, but I don't understand why you would leave us just for a shred of information about her." Her words came out smoothly, but I sensed the undertone of bitterness and jealousy. "There is a chance that she could still be alive. At least, Nadia has given me that hope. How? Her ice-blue eyes narrowed. I was kept in some sort of stasis in the radical that kept me alive through millennia. Nadia awoke me from it, and there is a chance I could do the same for my daughter. Nadia just told you this? She crossed her slender arms over her breasts. Yes, but you made the decision to leave before you spoke with her. Yes, but I love you, Kaer, she interrupted me. I want to spend the rest of my life with you. I want to spend every night in your arms and make beautiful children with you. But I also love my kingdom. I have a duty to protect my people from any threat and ensure prosperity for them. I am willing to sacrifice my happiness for my friends and family. Are you not willing to do the same? Are you asking me to choose you over my daughter? Jesme's eyes were cold and hard. What had happened to her in the last few months? No, you already made that choice before you had any hope she might live. I want you to understand how much I love you, how much you hurt me, and that I am giving you the chance to change your mind. Stay here. I will speak to the Empress. She needs me. She will agree to my request. With you at my side, our kingdom will be strong. I will no longer fear vipers beneath my bed. I will give you more children, so that you will forget about a daughter you never knew, a daughter who has long since passed away. Her voice was smooth and controlled. She had rehearsed this speech. The naive princess I had known was gone, replaced by a powerful queen. This will put you in danger. Kanneth's sister is here to find out what happened to her brother. They will take me back to stand before their council, so that I may be judged and punished. If I remain here, the clans will soon follow Ternia, and the Obarni will punish you for harboring a pretender. I know that Ternia is in the castle. I can work this out with the Empress. They have not yet spoken. The story can be spun to our advantage. She paused and looked to her right, down the dark hallway of the dungeon, as if to make sure no one could overhear our conversation. We are alone, I confirmed. I will tell Ternia that Fehalda killed Kanneth, and that you are not a pretender. The wrath of your people will be brought down upon the Elvens. We will solve two problems at once. The Empress will be wiped from this world, and Ternia will leave you alone. You could stay. I was surprised at the ruthlessness of her plan and the ease with which she spoke of betraying Talaxthi. They are taking me tomorrow. How will you get Ternia alone before then? What if she does not believe you? If Talaxthi finds out, she will kill you. I thought through the plan as I spoke, and could not shake the overwhelming sense of dread at allowing the princess to take such a great risk. Then I realized I was foolish to think it was up to me to let her do anything. If the first part of your plan succeeds, and the Obarni remove the Elvens from your world, you may be exchanging one master for another. I suspect that humans are not treated much better than Elvens by the Obarni. But the Obarni were once humans. Surely they will treat us fairly. I could tell that she was considering my words carefully. Has the Empress treated you fairly? Yes, better than I expected. But I have something she needs. Jesme flashed white teeth against the torchlight. What? The magic of the ancient Obarni. Not your people. There was an even older race that, according to Talaxthi, knew powerful magic and could use the radical without any external power source. She said that I am one of their descendants, and she has been working with me daily to help me master these powers. I remembered the tower that Malak investigated, and the small stone that projected an image of a woman who spoke in a strange language only I had understood. The familiar pain started to grow at my temples, and I took a deep breath to force more air into my blood. It has to do with the radical. She said there is one beneath the castle, but I have not seen it yet. She closed her blue eyes, and her soft smile disappeared. I can feel an energy in the ground. She calls it the world, and it hums through my body. She said I will be ready to use it soon, as your people do, and then I